Well, welcome to the celebration. We're celebrating today the naming of our church. For those of you who don't know, maybe you're new or visiting, St. Michael's is a church with over 163 years of history. It's the oldest church, actually, in Surry Hills. Vine Church was a church, actually, my wife and I, the Waterhouse family, they're up the back there, and a bunch of friends started 6 years ago, and then 2 years ago, Vine Church and St. Michael's came together in a partnership, and over the last year, a bunch of people have been saying, we need to sort out our name, like all blended families. We had a double barrel name for a little bit of time there. And this year we stopped, reflected, prayed, talked to each other about what name best captures our values, what it is that we're on about as a group of people. And it was decided after much prayer and discussion that Vine Church was the name that we wanted to be known as going forward. And so today we're celebrating that. I hope you're able to stay around for some dinner afterwards and for some festivities. And it's no surprise, the passage I've chosen on this day is Jesus' teaching about what it means for him to be the vine and for us to be the branches. And we're going to come to that in just a second. Before I get there, I want to do a couple of shout-outs. So first shout-out is to Nate and the production team and the musos. I came along yesterday into this room and they're all setting up. So can we give them some love? Very thankful for all the work you put into making today happen. The second group is Elaine and Kelly and Nick Chua and some of the other crew. I actually don't know who they are, who have put on the after church party. So can we show them some love? Fantastic. And the third shout out I want to shout out is to my wife, whose birthday it is today. So is she even in the room or is she hiding? She's out there. Come in, Lizzie. Now you know, couldn't be bothered, you know, throwing her a party this year. So I managed to trick a bunch of people into having a party today. And no, so that's not why we're running it. But Lizzie, we are glad it's your birthday. She's running away. She hates to be center of attention. This church wouldn't exist without her love and wisdom and sacrifice and encouragement. And so it's actually a wonderful day to celebrate her birthday on this day that we celebrate the name of our church. So back to our name, Vine Church. Why that name? Why do we think this name captures what we're on about as a church? How does it shape the values and the identity of our church? And that's what today's message is about. I like this name. In fact, 6 years ago when we started the little church plant, Vine Church, it was me that came up with this name. I thought it really did capture something of the joy, love, and freedom which Jesus offers us all. In this passage, Jesus says, I'm the vine, you're the branches, and if you remain in me, I'll remain in you, and you will bear much fruit. And I think that's a great message, it's a great idea, it's a great metaphor. And actually today, I went up to the church. At our church, there's a tree up at the church, and I need 3 volunteers for this little moment. Can I get 3 volunteers? Everyone's like, well, we don't know what it's going to be. You'll enjoy it if you like eating fruit. 3 volunteers, Becky, Maddie, one more, a guy. The girls are showing the guys up for their courage. Scott, oh no, Gordon, can you make these guys welcome? Come up, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. Stand over here. Okay, now, up at the church, we have this incredible, what's called a food forest. And in this food forest, there's actually a mulberry tree. And so I thought I'd show everyone. I just took this clipping today. And can you see the incredible mulberries on it? Now, if you like fruit and mulberries, you can tuck in. If you like, are you game? It's not a trick. I love mulberries. Do you love mulberries?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So I've just got you up here to make everyone else jealous because are they good? Okay. You can have a seat. I just wanted, you know, create a little bit of envy. I love mulberries. And if you're anything like me, mulberries bring a lot of nostalgia back to my life. Anyone else? Mulberries and nostalgia. I remember as a kid in the school playground at Greenwich Public School, my primary school, there was this enormous mulberry tree, and during class we'd run down to the mulberry tree, pick the leaves to feed to our silkworms. Do you remember doing that as a kid? And then once a year, when they came into season, we'd just stand there and pig out and come back with stained hands, stained mouths, and stained t-shirts. Our mums loved it, right? I love mulberry trees. Now, I'm not too sure whether this is right. Is this a vine or is it a tree? I assume it's a tree, so this metaphor doesn't completely work. But I do want, you to be kind of reflecting on this. This was actually from a portion of the tree which had just sprung up over the last pretty much 2 months. Luke had pruned this earlier this year, and the most vibrant sprouting fruit on the tree came from the place where he'd pruned back. And I want you to see just how ripe and tender and juicy these mulberries. You can come and grab one a little bit later. The reason I love this passage and the reason I think Vine Church is a great name for our church is because if you asked most people in our city for a metaphor for Christianity, I don't think they would say fruitful, life-giving, a vine, a branches that just are bursting with fruit. I think most people in our city, this is what they think of Christianity. Dead, dry, hard, bits of broken off wood. I think that's how most people imagine Christianity to be. And I think Jesus' metaphor here, this is one of the most beautiful metaphors he uses to describe what he offers us. It's incredibly rich, isn't it? He says, I'm the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me, you will bear much fruit. And I think that speaks to the life, love, and freedom that he offers, the abundance, the joy. What a message we have to people in our city. And our vision as a church really is to do that, to see 1,000 people connected to the life, love, and freedom found in Jesus Christ. So today, we're going to stop, we're going to sit at Jesus' feet, and we're going to reflect on this metaphor. I am the vine, he says, you are the branches. If you remain in me, you will bear much fruit. And the moment that Jesus gives this teaching is the night before he's about to die on that Roman cross. He sat there in the upper room on that night with his disciples, preparing them for the next day. He's going to be brutally tortured. This was the man that they had come to believe was the Son of God. And then he's telling them, no, I'm going to be killed. And he prepares them for what's about to take place. And he says to them, John chapter 14, he says, the reason I have to go to the cross is so that I could prepare a place for you in heaven. The only way for you to have life is for me to give up my life for you. By giving up my life, I will pay the debt of your sins, so that you don't have to pay that debt and so that you can have life again. And so he spends this night teaching them what his death means. And then at the end of chapter 14, Jesus says, come now, let's leave. But in our Bibles, he just continues to teach. And what most scholars believe is going on there is he does leave, but on the way out east across Jerusalem up to the Garden of Gethsemane, where he will spend the last moments of freedom in prayer before God, those last hours, that on the way, Jesus is teaching his disciples through the city streets. And it's probable that Jesus walks through a vineyard. And there are vines, there are branches, there's fruit all above them or on the sides of them. And he picks up this metaphor. He says, you know what, I've got to keep preparing you guys on the way. I'm the vine. You see this? I'm the vine, you're the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. And so that's where we find ourselves. We see him talk about three characters here. He says, I'm the vine. He says, we're the branches. And the third character, he says, is my Father, God, is the gardener. The passage really is one of the greatest passages in the Bible on the Christian life. And this is what he says, I am the vine, you are the branches, and my Father is the gardener. So let's just spend our time looking at each of these characters before we go out to having a party. So first of all, Jesus says, I am the vine. He says, look at verse 1. He says, I'm the true vine and my Father is the gardener. And then verse 5, in your outlines there, he says, I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you're like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up and thrown into the fire and burn. Now, if you're a first century Jewish man or woman, you would be very familiar with this metaphor of the vine. Israel was described as a vine all the way through the Old Testament, particularly in the prophet Isaiah, the prophet Jeremiah, and a couple of the Psalms. And the way Israel is described is they are a vineyard which God planted and tended and nursed, and that he wanted their fruit to come back to him as a praise offering to him. But what Israel had done, Israel had wandered away from God, rejected the God that had delivered them out of Egypt, brought them through the Red Sea and into the land he had promised them, and they had gone after other gods and worshipped them. And that is the picture, not just of Israel, but of every single human being in our world. God has given us life and breath and everything, and yet we have turned away from him, walked away from him, cut ourselves off from him, the source of life, and we have withered and died. In Genesis chapter 3, we read the story of Adam and Eve, and as soon as they eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they begin to die. Physically, they begin to disintegrate. They don't die immediately, but they begin to disintegrate, but spiritually they die that day. They cut off from God, the source of all life and meaning and purpose and hope and friendship, and they go their own way, and on that day every single human being died. And that's the message of the Bible, that you and I, we're in a difficult situation. We are dead and helpless, unable to give ourselves back life. And Jesus comes along and he says to a group of people, remember, he's speaking to Jewish people at this time, and he says, I'm the vine. You failed at being a vine. You failed to be alive to God and bear fruit that brings praise to God. You failed to obey God and be connected to God. And the way you're going to get back to him is not by trying harder, by being better, by being more religious. The only way for you to connect yourself to God again is if I become the vine. Jesus is saying, I'm going to be the one who lives perfectly, lives the perfect life in connection with God. And because I'm a human being, I'm able to connect you to him and give you life. Just reflect on the metaphor. If you're a branch, what do you need in order to be alive and bear fruit? You need to be connected to the vine, which goes into the ground and sucks up the nutrients, the moisture, the whatever comes out of the ground and back into the branches, right? In order to bear fruit. There's no good being a branch on the ground, not connected to a vine. You're dead. You know, it's no point being a branch and thinking, you know what, I just need to sit under a vine. I need to be inspired by a vine. I just need to follow the example of a vine and then I'll be alive. No. If you're a branch and you want life, what do you have to do? You have to be connected to a vine. And I think all the religions of the world really are about branches lying dead on the ground, trying to follow the example, the teaching of some kind of religious leader who is a vine trying to tell them how to have life. But it's pointless, isn't it? If you're a branch, you don't need to be taught, you don't need to be inspired, you don't need an example, you need someone else to come into your life and give you life. That's what Christianity is. Jesus teaches. Jesus teaches. He's not teaching a system of just following the example of a moral teacher. He's not saying, here's my teaching, here's how you can find life and have life. No, he's saying, I am the life. I am the vine. And if you come to me and remain in me and connect to me by trusting me, you will have life. Christianity, it's not about following an example. It's not about being inspired. It's not about being taught. It's about regeneration. It's about God connecting you through His Son to the life which is in God. And can I say, that is what Christianity is about. Christianity is about a real person who conquered death and rose to give us new life, and who promises that if we come and trust in Him, He will come and live within us and begin to change us from the inside and give us new life now and eternal life beyond. Can I just say that is what our world needs, and I am surprised by how many people find that irrelevant today. Death has not stopped being our biggest problem in life. How do we face death? Jesus comes and He says, I'm the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me, life will come through to you. Not just life now, life in abundance, life knowing God as our Father, having our prayers answered. Did you see that on the way through this passage? An incredible promise that if you're in Jesus, God answers our prayers. The joy, but also life after death. Jesus connects us to God Himself. And we make that connection by trusting in Jesus. Now, one final thing here on the vine. I just want to see, it's interesting how Jesus starts, isn't it? Verse 1 of chapter 15, He says, I am the true vine. He doesn't just say, I am the vine. He could just say that, I am the vine. If you want life, you've got to be connected to me. But He's making another statement there, isn't He? He's saying, I am the true vine, which means, of course, that there are many other vines out there which want and promise to give us life, but really they're fakes. They cannot give us the life we need. And so Jesus doesn't just say, I am the vine. If you want life, come to me. He says, no, I am the true vine, because you and I are tempted to connect ourselves up to all kinds of manner of things in our life to try and find life. You know, that's the universal human condition. We're all searching to find life to the full, something to help us cope with the inevitability of death. And we mistake all kinds of things for the vine. There are all kinds of things in our life which we think of vines able to give us life. And we say, this is my life. This is where I get significance from. This thing is what I draw most pleasure from, and it becomes the vine for us. And whatever it is, it begins to run our lives for us, and it keeps us working for it, because if we lost it, we wouldn't have life. So we're desperate to keep it, and it keeps promising life, and it gives us moments of living, but it can never give us true life. Jesus says, I am the true vine. Now, and as we do that, as we latch on to things, not only does it not satisfy us, but we end up destroying these things because we cling to them so tightly and we're sucking the life out of them that actually it destroys them and us. Let me give you a couple of examples. Parents. And I'm a parent, I love my kids, but if I made the reason for living my kids, imagine the enormous pressure I would place on them and how that would actually crush them, wouldn't it? If they become my life, That'll actually put so much pressure on them, that'll suck the life out of them. You look at entrepreneurs, sorry to pick on those of you who've started businesses, but you look at entrepreneurs who make their company their life, and they end up putting so much pressure on their poor selves and their poor employees that they suck the life out of their business. So just look at men and women who are longing to find a partner for their life. They put so much pressure on the person they fall in love with. They end up getting married, and there's just so much pressure in that marriage. Why? Because their expectations for their partner, their partner can't live up to their unrealistic expectations. They aren't their life. They're a friend to go through life with. Jesus is saying here, I am the true vine. Human beings are always attaching themselves to other things to try and give them life, but whatever they attach to, they end up sucking the life out of those things. And it ends up killing themselves and the people. And he says, no, you know what? I am the true vine. Whoever remains in me and I in them, they will bear much fruit because my life comes into them. Where do you go for life to really live? When are you most alive? What makes you feel most alive? This is Jesus' promise. I'm the vine, the true vine. Stop looking elsewhere. Come to me. I give you life now. I will connect you with God, and I will give you life then, life eternal. Jesus is the only vine that won't disappoint us, that won't change, that can't be lost, that is not based on the ups and downs of how well we live. He's not even something which death can take away from us. I am the true vine, he says. And then he says, you're the branches, right? Look at verse 5. He says, I am the vine. Secondly, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. And then look down at verse 8. He says, this is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. Notice he is the true vine, never in his Father's love. You and I were always going in and out, aren't we? Pleasing him, and then we go off and please ourselves. And then pleasing him again, and then we attempt it and go off and please ourselves. But he is the true vine. He remains in the Father's love. Verse 11, I've told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this, love each other as I have loved you. So Jesus is talking here about branches. And he's saying these branches, they're going to be fruitful if the branch remains in the vine. Now, I want to be fruitful. I want my life to look like this, right? With lots of fruit on it, lots to share with others. I don't want my life to look like this, right? And so how is it? What is it? What is the key to remaining fruitful? Jesus tells us, you don't have to manufacture, you don't have to set little manufacturing plants up on your branches. What you need to do in order to remain fruitful is, what does he say? Remain in the vine. A branch doesn't have manufacturing plants. It's connected to a vine and it draws the life, the nutrients from the vine, which ends up bearing fruit on itself. You know, nowhere in this passage are we commanded to bear fruit. We're commanded to love one another and to obey God, but we're not commanded to bear fruit because Jesus is saying here, if you just would stick with me, if you just stay with me, be with me, remain in me, trust me, it's inevitable. It's inevitable that you will bear fruit. I want fruit in my life. What do I need to do? Struggle? I have to think up some crazy ideas. I just need to stick with Jesus. Trust him, listen to him, honor him. And he
will do the fruit bearing in my life. Jesus promises to bring fruit out of our life. Now, what is the nature of this fruit? What does it look like? Well, it looks like two things that describe love and obedience. If you stay with Jesus, if you remain in Jesus, stay close to him, this is what he will produce in your life. He will make you a more loving person, and he will make you a person who loves to obey God. That's the fruit he's talking about. So take a look, first of all, take love. Whatever you connect your life to, you'll draw the essence of it from. So if you're a branch and you're connected to a mulberry tree, you'll end up producing mulberries. If you're a strawberry branch, do strawberries have branches? I don't know. If you're a strawberry branch and you're connected to a strawberry vine, is that right? I don't know. I'm such a terrible horticulturalist. I got no idea. But if you're connected to a strawberry vine, you're going to produce strawberries. If you're a Christian and you're connected to God, you're going to draw the essence of God into your life. What is the essence of God? Is it power? Well, if it's power, then in being connected to him, you will become a more powerful person. Is it intelligence? Is that the essence of God? Well, if it is, then you'll become a more intelligent person. But the essence of God is not power nor intelligence, it is love. That's what's at the heart of God. Three persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, fit community of three persons loving one another, never getting in a fight, so unlike our relationships. And as a result, if we're connected to that, what's the fruit of our lives going to be? It's going to be love. Jesus says, look there at verse 9. He says, as the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. And then verse 12, my command is this, love each other as I have loved you. That's the fruit which Jesus wants to grow on you. You're a branch. He wants you to become a more loving person. Look down at verse 13. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay their life down for one's friends. You are my friends, he says. Jesus is saying, I'm going to go lay my life down for you tomorrow. Remember, this is the night before Good Friday. He's going to the cross to provide salvation for the world. And he says, I love you. Look at my life. Everything I do is for the sake of you and your salvation. If that's what I'm like and you're connected to me, then what are you going to become? You're going to become loving. If you're connected to a loving God, it's inevitable that you will become a loving person. Love is the first fruit that Jesus is referring to here. Now, a number of years ago, I was at men's Katoomba convention up at Katoomba. A bunch of men get in a big, big shed about four times the size of this room. They come and listen to the Bible taught. They encourage one another. And many, many years ago, I was there and they were interviewing an Australian rugby league player, Brad Mackay. Used to play for the Dragons. Any Dragons fans here? Not very vocal. Aren't you guys meant to be a little bit more vocal than that? You know, your team? No. Anyway, he used to play for St. George Dragons, and he represented Australia and New South Wales, the Blues. And anyway, he got up and he shared how he became a Christian. He was dating a girl, and at some point she sat him down and said, look, I don't think you're a Christian, and I don't want to date and marry someone who doesn't share my faith. And he goes, no, I am a Christian. Of course I'm a Christian. And she's like, no, you're not a Christian. You don't have the values of a Christian. You say you believe, but you don't really. It doesn't change any element of your life, Brad. And so he was obviously quite depressed by that. And he thought, I've got to do something about that. So he went and sat down with his team chaplain. And he sat down with him and opened the Bible and realized he wasn't a Christian and that he needed God's forgiveness. And so he trusted in Jesus and became a Christian. He became a branch connected to the vine, and he started to have new life. She saw that. She got back together with him. They got married. They had three children. And then after having three children, just 10 weeks after the birth of their third child, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And 3 months later, she died, and she went to heaven. And Brad Mackay, he got up in front of, 2,000 men at Men's Katoomba Convention, and he was asked, what was it that got you through with these three young children when your wife was sick and dying and then dead? And he said two things. First of all, heaven. I know that one day I will see her in heaven, and that brings me great comfort. But secondly, he said, the thing that got me through was our church, Helensburgh Baptist Church, he said. And he went on to say that for 6 months after his wife's death, he didn't have to cook a single meal for his kids. Every meal was provided, and most of them were edible. All right? And that's what Jesus says here, isn't it? He says, love each other as I have loved you. If you're a branch, you will bear fruit, and the fruit you're to bear is loving one another. Well done, Helensburgh Baptist Church. It's terrific, isn't it? Here is a single mother in our church. She just doesn't have time to clean her car. She can't get maintenance done on her home. What's going to happen? Well, the branches around her will get together and help her out. That's the way church should function, isn't it? We've been loved with a great love, and so we love. That's the fruit that Jesus is producing in us. Here's a young trainee minister whose sister gets sick and is living in another country. And so what do the branches do? They come to me and say, hey, we'd love to pay for her. We know she doesn't have the money. We'd love to pay for her, all her airfares, to get her to the bedside of her sister while she's sick. That's what branches do, isn't it? Because a church acts with great love. Jesus says, if you remain in me, and I knew you will bear much fruit. He says, I've loved you with a great love. You're to go out and to love one another in the same way. That's fruit, isn't it? That's the fruit that we see in our church, isn't it? It's a wonderful thing. I love being a part of this church. There's just so many better things. The mulberries all around the place. It's fantastic. What makes a great church love? We're greatly loved. And therefore, we're to be greatly loving. That ought to be the motto of our church, shouldn't it? And if it was, there'd be so much fruit for us to enjoy and for the world to see that they might come to the true vine and find life in Him. That's the first piece of fruit. Notice the second piece of fruit quickly is obedience. Verse 12, Jesus says, if you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I've kept my Father's commands and remain in His love. And back in the previous chapter, Jesus says, if you loved me, you'd keep my commands. So Jesus is saying, the fruit which I'm looking for is love, loving each other, and that you'd obey the commands I give you, which really are just to teach you what it looks like to love others. Now, I think this is challenging. I think obedience is the most unfashionable aspect of Christianity today. I listen to a lot of sermons to try and feed my own soul, and very few people ever are talking about obedience, obeying God. But this is the acid test of what it means to be, of what it looks like to be a Christian. The fruit that you are alive is that you love to do what God says. The fruit. Now, notice that doesn't give you life. Other religions say, no, fruit gives you life, right? So if you follow the Eightfold Path, follow the laws, then that means God will have to give you life. Christianity is the opposite. Christianity says, you're a dead branch. You can't connect yourself to God. You need God to send His Son to connect you back to Him. There's nothing you can do to connect yourself back to God. You need a vine to connect yourself to so that you'd have life. There's no life in us. There's only life in Jesus. And so we come to Him by faith and we receive life. So fruit doesn't make us alive, but it is the sign you're alive, isn't it? And so if you're a Christian, if you have life in Jesus, but you're not loving others or you're not obeying God, you ought to question whether you're actually connected to the vine. Because you're a branch connected to a healthy vine, you can't help but bear fruit. Jesus is saying that. And Jesus is saying one of the fruits that show yourself, prove yourself to be alive is obedience. Not perfect obedience. None of us perfectly obey God. None of us will until we arrive in His presence. But obedience does show us to be connected to the vine. Now, I think this issue of obedience, this is the reason most people in our city trip over Christianity, isn't it? I remember when I grew up in a Christian home, and when I got to university and became an adult, I started to trip over Christianity. And the key point at which I tripped over was the issue of the commands of God. I like the idea of life after death. I like the idea that God loves me and might be looking after me, but I didn't like His commands. Rather than life-giving, they appeared, to me at least, to be life-sapping. I thought they were there designed just to keep me unhappy. And I really think this is the problem with most people in our city. Most people in our city do believe in a God. Atheism hasn't taken hold that much. Most people believe in a God. Most people in our city believe in a Christian God. And yet this is the point at which they distance themselves from Christianity, because they think God's commands would oppress us rather than actually give life. Let me give you an example. And it's ridiculous, because in obedience to Jesus, Jesus knows how to have life. He created our lives. He knows the best way for us to go. And as a result, He gives us His commands that we might know how to enjoy life. Let me give you an example. This week, not only did we celebrate Liz's birthday, but we celebrated 14 years of marriage. Come on. And thank you. And I'm not mocking her because I've got this, but she has all these kinds of rules in our house. I'm not mocking her at this point. Truly, I'm not. One of her rules is, put the washing in the clothes basket, rinse your plates and place them in the dishwasher. If I want to kiss her, I've got to brush my teeth. These are the kind of rules that she has in our house. Put your things back in their place. No mobile phones at the dinner table. Take your belt off before you come to bed if I'm asleep, because she wakes up when it's rattling, right? These are all her rules. Now, it would be a mistake, wouldn't it, for me to go, how oppressive. Come on. Marriage is just so lifeless. She's such a lifeless, non-life-giving partner. No, that would be to misunderstand these rules. I've got rules. She's got rules. The rules are designed not to annoy each other. They're designed to help us enjoy life together. And I remember when I discovered this spiritually for the first time when I was 20, and I realized, no, hang on a second, if God made me and loves me and loves me enough to give up His Son for me, then perhaps His commands aren't designed to kind of sap life from me, but they're actually designed to show me how life is meant to live. Jesus says, this is one of the fruits that you are alive. You realize God can be trusted. I'm connected to Jesus, and I do want to do what He says. He knows what's best. And as a result, His commands, rather than becoming these oppressive constraints, they become signposts to freedom and life. That is what a Christian is. Obedience and love. That's the fruit He's seeking to create in you and in our church. That's what our church is on about, right? Vine Church. Our church is on about Jesus, the source of life. And each one of us, in connection to Him, have life, life now and life eternal, and we're seeking to bear fruit. But finally, Jesus doesn't finish there. He talks about the gardener. Come back to verse 1 quickly, and I'll finish on this. Jesus says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. This vineyard He's created, He hasn't left to itself. The wild animals aren't getting in there destroying it. No, God has a plan for your life and for this church. I am the true vine, my Father is the gardener. And notice what he does, verse 2. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will become more fruitful. So God is the gardener. Jesus' Father is the gardener, and he is doing two things to the branches. He is cutting off dead branches, and he's pruning back healthy branches. Whoever you are today, you are one of those groups. Jesus has given you a part to play in this story. You are either a dead branch that is in danger of being cut off, or you're a healthy branch which is in the process of being pruned. So what do we do with that? Well, let's have a look. First of all, he first cuts off every branch that bears no fruit. The gardener examines the branches to see where there is deadness. He wants the vineyard to be alive and genuine and bearing fruit. He's looking to see whether a branch is fruitless. And like a good horticulturalist, he looks to make sure that the dead branches are pulled off. Now, what is a dead branch? Well, a dead branch is a branch that is not connected to the vine. And Jesus is saying that if you're not connected to him, then you're in danger of being cut off. How do you tell a dead branch from a living branch? Well, the only visible sign that you might be a dead branch and not a living branch is whether or not there's fruit. And so Jesus here, he gives us a warning. He gives us a warning, doesn't he? He wisely gives us both warnings and promises. He gives us warnings for those of us who are taking it too easy and are not connected to Jesus, but he also gives us promises for our doubts. If you're overwhelmed by doubt, notice verse 9. Jesus says, as the Father has loved me, so I've loved you. Or verse 13, greater love has no one than this, than he lay his life down for his friends. You are my friends. There's been no greater love than what I'm about to do for you, he says. There's words of comfort to those who are doubting. But notice, to those who are complacent in their ignoring of God, he gives warnings, severe warnings. And so if you're caught in sin and you know it and you don't do anything about it and you're rejecting God, you're ignoring the God who made you and redeemed you, then Jesus' warning is here that you will be cut off. Now notice, this isn't the person who is struggling to obey Jesus in their life. I think in all of us, there's a wrestle, there's a fight, there's got to be. This is the person who's given up, who just doesn't care. And in this room, there are people like that, and Jesus is loving you, carefully warning you today. He says, there's only life found in me. Are you connected? Then if you are, show the fruit. And if there's no fruit, then maybe today you need to get on your knees and pray to God, God, I'm worried. I'm not sure if there's genuine life in me. Please forgive me and change me and make me alive. But then notice, secondly, not only is the gardener cutting back, he's also pruning. The gardener is not just out there looking for, he's out there looking for fruit. He finds a dead branch, he removes it. He finds a healthy branch, and here's the crazy thing. He prunes it. He cuts it. He removes things from it to bring out the best in the vine, to bring out its fruitfulness. He cuts things off it. He removes things from the vine. He removes branches to make the branches more and more fruitful. He's guided by the desire that these branches would be as fruitful as possible. And so he's removing things which the branch doesn't need, which will stop it from drawing its life on the vine. Now, just imagine this. I wonder if you've ever been to a vineyard when they've been pruning. If you went to a vineyard, you walk through the, you know, the between the things, and they were, you know, pruning the vineyard. You'd look all on the ground, and it would look like so much of the vine and the branches on the ground. You'd like, what on earth? Why is there so much being cut away? You know, you'd even see beautiful, you know, grapes on the ground that have been cut off. All the ground strewn with leaves and branches. And you would wonder, why on earth? You'd look at that poor vine itself and it looks cut and pruned at 100 points. To the ignorant eye, you would think, you know, what a waste. But to the skillful eye, you would realize that wasn't a random event. That there is a gardener who cares about the health of the vine and is doing everything in his power to ensure its health and life and fruitfulness. Now, this is kind of scary because this is the principle. This is the spiritual principle, isn't it? God is a gardener, and you are a branch. And even if you are healthy spiritually, He will cut things back from your life. He will prune you. And in those moments you're feeling pruned, you'll feel like, what on earth is God doing? Does He even care? And Jesus is teaching us something very important here. He's saying, no, God does care. He does have a plan. His goal is that you would rely on the vine, that you'd be drawing on the vine and upon nothing else. And He may remove things from your life that feel incredibly painful when He snips them off. You know, before I was a pastor, I used to think, you know, there are some people in life that go through life with significant things that they have to wrestle with. And then I became a pastor and I realized every single person has something in their life which is difficult. It's not just people, you know, people who have cancer or who have loved ones with cancer. Every one of us has something which we're struggling with. And it feels as though God's cut into us and removed a piece from us. And Jesus, at the end of this passage, He's saying something incredibly pastoral in this moment, isn't He? He's saying, trust the gardener. He has a plan for your life. His plan is that you would stick with Jesus, remain in Him, and bear the fruit of love and obedience to God. And He will do things, incredibly painful things, in us to ensure that we are sticking with Jesus. I wonder if you've forgotten that. If you're a Christian, have you forgot that? That sometimes He uses trial to ensure that you really are relying on Jesus. We need to be reminding one another that God has a plan in the midst of trial and that therefore we can trust Him. What kind of church do we want to be? We want to be a church where people are being connected to the life, love, and freedom found in Jesus Christ. That they would not be selfish branches living for themselves, but that they would have a heart of love because they've been greatly loved by God. That they would look at the commands of God and see them as signposts to life rather than oppressive constraints. And all of that together, right? We're all together in this, aren't we? Branches together in a vineyard which is being tended by a loving God, who cares for each one of us and us corporately together, and who will do everything possible so that we are a fruitful, loving, obedient church. That's what our church is on about, isn't it? Vine church. This is Jesus' church. He's giving us life. He's looking after us. Let's love Him. Let's love one another and obey Him.